The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
The book is still warm, so I know the little guy was really here. I've actually seen UFOs. A lot of people have. I am going to reserve the case that I myself am familiar with for about the third program in a series about UFOs and ESP and some strange phenomena that are increasingly difficult nowadays to understand and to explain in the light of present scientific knowledge. There's a lot of physical evidence associated with UFOs that a lot of people are familiar with because there is a plethora of books on the subject and magazine articles, and we're going to tell you about some that we have we'd like you to write for a little later on in the program about the universe itself and also about is there life out there. Back in the early days of UFO sightings and result in UFO research, there were relatively few good photographs that turned up. Most of them appeared when you saw them in books and publications as if they had been tampered with, and I think there were a few cases where it was sensationalized that they were hoaxes, and of course that turned a lot of people off about UFOs. They began to think maybe they aren't real after all. But more and more pictures are turning up nowadays. UFOs have repeatedly been associated with ignition and light failures of cars and trucks. Perhaps several dozen such cases could be amassed. Interference with radio and television reception has been reported many times in conjunction with UFOs, too. There are instances where UFOs have been reported as having landed, and after departure, there would be observed shallow depressions or actually burnt or damaged vegetation or perhaps a hole in the ground or something. There are a few cases on record stating that some sort of residue was left behind, supposedly by whatever craft may have landed. However, few if any of these are really backed up by meaningful laboratory analysis. There are many cases of UFOs, however, being picked up on radar, where the radar operator inside a building, seeing a blip on his screen, was never able to go outside or to check it. He may have had about a 50-mile radius on the scan anyhow, but something unidentified, never explained, picked up on radar. One bit of evidence which might be expected and yet is conspicuously absent is a sonic boom of any kind. A few cases have been reported as having been accompanied by explosive noises of some sort, but for the most part, UFOs are described, or even monitored on radar, as moving at fantastic speeds, but without any accompanying sonic boom. The observers themselves may experience certain physical effects in some of the reports you may have read about, other than just seeing and hearing the craft. A peculiar tingling or a paralysis seems to be reported more widely than any other physiological or psychological effects. And this, of course, might be explained by fear, a prickling of the scalp or something like that. But in some cases, this paralysis occurs before any sensation of fear. The paralysis, in fact, may be the factor that makes the observer aware of the UFO's presence. There are also cases of skin reddening, burns, and a few cases, believe it or not, of severe bodily damage. Now, there are a few cases I'd like to tell you about. Some of these are rather widely known of UFO buffs. It was back in Iowa that a farmer went out to a soybean field on a summer day in 1973 and discovered a burned area in the field about 40 feet across. Near the edges of this burned area were four holes about a foot deep and a foot across, almost as if something with legs had been sitting in that patch of his. In the middle of the burned area was an exceptionally blackened spot that he said was about 18 inches in diameter, in which the soil had become very, very firm. 13 months earlier, though, an almost identical phenomenon had been observed on a farm about 14 miles distant. It was at a midnight, November 2nd or 3rd, 1957, goes back quite a ways, that in a two-hour period near midnight of that date, nine different vehicles experienced ignition failures, and many suffered headlight failures, as objects described as about 100 to 200 feet long, glowing with a general reddish or bluish glow, were encountered on roads in the vicinity of a small town called Leveland in Texas. Now, this series of incidents became national headline news, you may remember that, until officially explained in terms of ball lightning and wet ignition. However, on checking weather data, it was found that there were no thunderstorms anywhere close to Leveland that night, and there was no rain capable of wetting the ignition, so the mystery remains unresolved. A radar case involving both ground and airborne radar occurred about 9:40 p.m. back in July 29th of 1952. Ground radar at an aircraft control and warning station in Michigan picked up a UFO coming out of the north at a speed of over 600 miles per hour. Now, you know, UFO doesn't mean automatically from outer space. It doesn't mean anything except unidentified flying object. It's something, it's flying, and it's unidentified. One of the three jets doing intercept exercises nearby was in this case ordered to pursue this thing. As ground radar showed the jet approaching the UFO, the object suddenly executed a complete 180-degree turn, exact opposite direction, and headed back north. The jet was by that time up to 21,000 feet, and the pilot spotted some kind of a brilliant multicolored light just as his radar man picked up the UFO for the first time on the aircraft radar. The jet continued in pursuit for about 20 minutes and could never close with the object. I want to read some more of those, maybe a little later on, but I wanted to tell you about a very exciting telephone conversation with one of two ship workers. I believe they were temporarily unemployed and were fishing on this day in a small town in Mississippi.
On October the 11th, I think it was on Thursday, Calvin Parker and myself, at that time we were employed by F.B. Walker Shipyard in Pascola, Mississippi. We decided sometime during the day that after work we were going fishing. And after trying two or three different spots on the river, we didn't seem to have very much luck. So we moved back up the river to an old abandoned shipyard, the old Shaw Peter Shipyard. And after fishing there a while, it didn't seem like our luck was going to be any better. And we were just about ready to go home. And I don't know why I turned around, but I heard some kind of zipping sound. And as I was turning around, I seen some type of blue flashing lights. And about the same time, I saw some type of craft that was trying to land on the ground. It hovered about a foot and a half, 2 foot from the ground. And I guess the craft must have been about 30 or 40 foot long and probably 8 or 10 foot high. There seemed to be a door that appeared in one end of it. And the light coming from the inside was real bright. And about the same time, there was three things that appeared there in the door that I just couldn't believe that I was looking at something like that. Their overall body was shaped something similar to a human body. It was a little short, about 5 foot or 5'2". And the head, it didn't have a neck. The head seemed to come directly to the shoulders. It was a grayish looking, and it was real wrinkled. The skin was, if it was a skin. And the arms were shaped like a human arm, but they seemed a little long. And the hands, the fingers were webbed. So if you had any eyes, I don't remember what the eyes looked like. And there was something like a nose that came out to a point. And the ears, if it was ears, they came out to a point like the nose, only I guess they were a little bit longer. And instead of walking, they just glided out of the craft about the same height that the craft was from the ground, and they seemed to glide over to us. And when they got there, two of them took hold of my arms, and I seemed to just raise up to about the height from the ground that they were. And at the same time, I noticed that one had taken hold of Calvin, and I saw Calvin go limp. He fainted. And I didn't see him again until after I came out of the craft. And as we were going in the doorway of the craft, the light was almost blinding. I couldn't hardly see. It was real bright. And there were some type of instruments in there. I just can't describe them. I didn't get a good look at them because of the brightness of the light. But they did have something that seemed to, some type of instrument that seemed to come out from the wall. And it resembled some type of eye. And it seemed to just, it's again, my entire body, while those things were holding me. It was terrifying. I couldn't move anything but my eyes, and I didn't know what to think. I didn't know whether they were going to take me away or what they were going to do to me. But they came back and took me, took a hold of me and carried me back outside. And that's when I seen Calvin again. And he was standing there with his arms outstretched and seemed to be almost in shock. And I was trying to make my way to Calvin when I heard that zipping sound again. And I turned around to look, and the traffic was just almost immediately gone.
For thousands of years, scientists have wondered and speculated about the origin of the universe. Theories have risen and fallen in a powerful flood of scientific evidence, but the question is still unanswered. How was the universe created? The Ambassador College free booklet, Our Awesome Universe, shows you first the brilliant regalia of our universe, and then brings you up to date on the greatest pronouncements of science and how science says the universe was created. But more than that, this booklet goes beyond science, beyond technology, and boldly confronts you with the only answer that fits all the facts. This attractive brochure captures dozens of breathtaking star formations that remain invisible to the naked eye. You'll find it extremely informative. Now you don't have to wonder and speculate about the origin of the solar system. Be sure to request your free copy of Our Awesome Universe. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales, 2001.
Well, that was quite a kind of a spooky telephone conversation. I remember seeing that in the news when it originally happened and hearing those gentlemen talk about what they had seen and experienced. Is there really life out there? Are UFOs explainable by meteorological phenomena and Air Force jets and ball lightning and swamp gas alone, or is there something more to it? This brochure you just heard advertised is in full color. It's called Our Awesome Universe. It has some of the most beautiful photography of our universe, what is out there in space. It's free of charge. It begins by showing you a little bit about the universe, our solar system, comparative sizes and spaces and so on, and takes us on an imaginary journey in space. Stellar magnificence, the size, the intensity, the heat, how a star is born. There's beautiful full-color illustrations and, of course, photography throughout this brochure that you can have by return mail. It was at a recent Gallup poll released in November 29, 1973. They found that up to 95% of the American populace had heard or read of UFOs. And, of course, that's a pretty enormous percentage because at the first glance, that was the highest awareness score ever recorded in the 37-year history of the Gallup poll. So people are quite aware of it. Even more astounding, though, was the number that claimed to have seen a UFO. An earlier poll in 1966 showed that 5% of the population thought they had seen some strange objects, but in this recent poll, the figure had grown to 11% of the adult population. If that 11% were extended then to the entire population, it would mean that about 15 million Americans claim to have spotted UFOs, or that UFOs spotted them. Some other poll results, no one education group was shown to be either significantly more or less likely to have seen a UFO. It didn't therefore zero in on anyone, one particular class of people or any particular educational background. College-educated people, for example, see about as many as anyone else. In fact, the poll found that 12% of the population with college background claimed to have seen UFOs, compared with 10% of those with a high school background. So there were somewhat, there were more sightings for those with a higher education. But it seems that you're more likely to have seen a UFO if you live in the Midwest or the South as opposed to the West and the East. And you'll probably have better luck UFO watching if you live in a small town or a rural area. Why this is, I don't know, but the poll showed that. The poll found that 51% of those interviewed believe that these flying objects are real, not just figments of the imagination or hallucinations. And 46% believe there is intelligent life on other planets. Equally as interesting, an earlier poll in 1971 found that 53% of the top leaders, whatever is meant by that term, in 72 nations believe in the existence of intelligent life on other planets. Well, when you try to categorize UFOs and what these sightings are, it's a little bit difficult because the broad majority, frankly, do turn out to be explainable phenomena. Not all, by any means, but the majority. Most of them turn out to be identified and rationalized easily by phenomena that do exist, such as, for instance, weather balloons, and this has been proved, space debris re-entering the Earth's atmosphere. There are hundreds of satellites up there, and sometimes they come down and land, and sometimes they burn up altogether before they hit the Earth, and I imagine sometimes they don't. Meteors, mirages, which do occur, ball lightning, which is a phenomena that I have never seen, but apparently it's quite weird and eerie when you see it, birds and even insects, and there can be a glow of swamp or marsh gas that some people have seen, aircraft, planets. In one case, the observer thought what was a mother craft and several smaller ships turned out to be Jupiter with several of its moons. I guess he had binoculars or awfully strong eyeglasses. And dozens or perhaps hundreds of other things, including even insects and clouds of insects or birds. I so well remember the calls that jammed the L.A. Police Department switchboard when a lot of people, after the evening sun had already set, but these birds were high enough that the sun was still shining on them in the last rays of the sun, and the migratory pelicans, in this case, were flying up to Lake Crowley, and they were observed above the hills flying in a V formation. A lot of people thought those were UFOs. In the Air Force studies, in the Condon Report, about 75 to 80% of the cases investigated were proved to be of such natural causes, or else shown to be very likely due to such causes. The 20 to 25% of the unidentified and unexplained generally fell into the following of four categories. Flying discs, in other words, very low aspect aircraft of some type. Secondly, torpedo or cigar-shaped or sausage-shaped objects or bodies with no wings or fins visible in flight. Third, spherical or balloon-shaped objects. And fourth, like glowing balls of light of some kind. The observation about the four categories of UFOs was first made in an Air Force report clear back in 1949. At that time, since the Air Force was studying UFOs largely out of concern about national defense and wondering whether or not the Russians had some kind of means of transportation or some kind of aircraft to which we knew nothing, and of course the Air Force itself for years was blamed as having been responsible and having actually developed some strange kind of cylindrical or spherical or perhaps saucer-like or disc-shaped craft, which was a strange aircraft of some kind that was being kept top secret. So the report noted that vehicles of the first three shapes were capable of flight, and I quote their words, by aerodynamic and aerostatic means and can be propelled and controlled by methods known to aeronautical designers. That observation seemed to be significant back in 1949, since the Air Force was concerned lest UFOs actually might be hostile foreign aircraft from Russia. The significance for us today is that UFO sightings since that time basically adhered to the same four categories. We talked to Dr. Robert Baker, who is a UFO analyst and was involved in Project Blue Book, about his views on UFOs.
Are there certain phenomena or man-made objects that are commonly mistaken for UFOs?
Yes, there's a large number of things, all the way from the very small, such as insects that are close to you and you project in the background or take pictures of and you think they look like objects far away from you, where they're really quite close. There's obviously things like balloons, birds, airplane reflections, contrails, atmospheric effects, optical effects. You can go on and on and on. There's, I'd say, probably hundreds of natural phenomena that could be mistaken and are often mistaken for strange things.
Could you describe some of the more interesting or puzzling, unexplainable hard data that you've had the occasion to analyze?
Well, there have been several different films. As I said, I've primarily concentrated on films. The first two films, I call the Montana and the Utah films. These are fairly classical examples of the anomalistic phenomena. These are the ones that I studied early on in the game in 1954 and 56 at Douglas. One showed two objects moving with a background, and this is very important to get a background into the film. These were moving along opposite to the wind. It seemed to be quite obvious that they were not balloons, birds, insects, and so forth. The candidate natural phenomena were airplane reflections, and they had, at the date given on the film, there were two airplanes in the vicinity, two jets. The problem is that date apparently was wrong, and so a lot of people are trying to prove things based upon the date really didn't have much substance to their analysis. On the other hand, it doesn't really make any difference. Two airplanes might have been there. Now the question is, on the film, going through a photogrammetric analysis, could you really confirm that these were airplanes? Well, not only could you not confirm it, but if they were close enough to give the size images that were on the film, you would have identified them as planes. Furthermore, their speeds and so forth were not of the type that would go along with the planes. The other was the Utah film taken in Tree Mountain, Utah. This showed a whole group of objects moving around, usually in twos, groups of twos. Birds looked like the major thing there. And however, there was no flapping, no updraft, so the candidate bird natural phenomenon did not appear to be very reasonable.
Have there ever been any material remains from any of these reported or supposed landings by extraterrestrial vehicles of any type?
Well, there have been imprints and so forth. In Iowa, there were some. There, as far as I know, and in the Condon report that was sponsored by the Air Force, there really is no true evidence. People have found angel hair and such things, but these, under analysis, have shown to be either non-existent or somehow terrestrial. So at the moment, I don't believe there are any artifacts that are in the hands of anybody for analysis that are purported to be from an extraterrestrial origin, except, of course, meteorites that we have, and we understand that phenomenon pretty well.
You want to be informed, because this many sightings can't be just discounted as a bunch of kooks and ding-a-lings and nuts altogether. Now, some of it can be. And where it is being proved to be something that is purely explainable by natural phenomena, of course it has been. But there are many cases where it cannot be explained that way. Current UFO research is pretty much in limbo in one sense. They're now trying to get a very, very scientific group together. Many private organizations have undertaken studies of UFOs. These were often as not unscientific and associated with cultism as a problem. The two most famous scientific inquiries into the UFO problem were first the Air Force study, which lasted for two solid decades, from the late 40s into the late 60s, and two, the Condon report, referred to in that interview, done during the last years of the Air Force project. Both of these studies discredited the whole idea that UFOs might be due to other than natural causes. But both studies have also drawn a lot of criticism. Perhaps the most outspoken and respected critic of both studies is Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who is chairman of Northwestern University's astronomy department. Dr. Hynek was for 20 years a scientific consultant to the Air Force study of UFOs, and he was instrumental in the establishment of the Condon Committee. He feels that on the one hand, the two studies did not accurately evaluate the facts. You can see the section on that in the studies of UFOs that you can get written material on from public libraries and, of course, looking into the magazine articles of the past in Reader's Guide and so on. On the other hand, he says that the whole subject of UFOs is populated with so many, in his words, not mine, kooks, nuts, ding-a-lings, and cultists, end quote, that serious scientists don't want to touch the subject. Dr. Hynek has decided to launch then a new effort to bring scientific respectability to the search for truth about UFOs. He isn't out to try to prove anyone's theory about what UFOs are. Rather, he hopes to make some progress in evaluating those UFOs which truly are unidentified, which amounts to about 20% of the sighting reports, 80% or so being explainable by natural causes. The core of this new study will be a center for UFO studies, which Dr. Hynek hopes will soon have a full-time staff and funding. He says he has the support of many people, including professors in such institutions as UCLA, John Hopkins, Stanford, and the University of Chicago. Well, perhaps more then would be forthcoming if and when such a committee gets going and more reports are found on it. But in the meantime, just what are UFOs so far as we can tell? As stated before, the majority of all these cases turns out not to be unidentified at all, but due to perfectly understandable causes. Balloons that escape, weather balloons, even child's balloons, kites and like, birds, planets, insects, dozens or hundreds of different things. Large UFO research projects find that about 75 to 80% of all UFO reports fall into this category. But what about the remaining fraction of cases that can't be explained by known natural causes? One could always say that people who report such things are crazy, having hallucinations, or they are lying. I'm going to break off here, maybe bring you some of these things later, because in a minute or two that I have left, I want to tell you what I saw. I was with two other pilots. There were at least two or three passengers of the aircraft that saw this. We had landed at Baffin Island up in the Arctic Circle, at Frobisher Bay. And we had just gotten out of the Fanjet Falcon aircraft, and we looked up into the sky. It was kind of hazy, and as I recall, slightly overcast, and there was a perfectly round, cylindrical object that appeared to be perfectly spherical in shape that was doing all sorts of completely weird things. It was defying even wind currents, you would think, if it had been a balloon, but it appeared to be very rapidly moving in one direction or the other. I told the other fellows, they looked, we all saw it. I looked away, looked back. Yes, it's still there. We looked at it for quite a while. Well, as we were filing our flight plan out of there, we went to the meteorological people to get the weather report, and we were pretty far away from any habitation of any kind. If you look on the map and see where Baffin Island is, up way north of Newfoundland, about halfway between here and Greenland at Frobisher Bay, and we asked if they had been sending up weather balloons, because that's what we thought it was. And they said no, they had not done any such a thing. There were no weather balloons up. Well, we never had it explained. I think it may have been a balloon that drifted in from somewhere else, but I still can't really explain why it moved in those strange ways. Well, next time, I'm going to go into the subject of whether or not there is such a thing as a spirit world, whether or not you can really explain all of these sightings by physical phenomena or even extraterrestrial phenomena, or whether, in fact, there is a spirit world that is even on this earth and which from time to time can and does manifest itself. In this informative and educative brochure, you will see full-color photographs of some of the most inspiring and astounding parts of the universe, of the Milky Way, of our own solar system, distances given from the Sun, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and the like. And it shows an imaginary journey into space toward the distant galaxies, about how long it would take and how old we would be when we got there. You'll be amazed to see the Horsehead Nebula and the Crab Nebula, M1 in Taurus, and how scientists now say they believe Pulsar, that pulsating star in the midst of that nebula, may be some kind of a super-dense neutron star that actually rotates up to 30 times a second. A great deal about the universe, of what astronomers now say about the origin of the universe and the ultimate in stellar collapse, how stars are made and how they blow up and disintegrate, what our galaxy is composed of, famous eyes focusing on space from various places in the Earth, the changes in theory and concept of how it all got there. The oscillating theory is explained, the steady-state cosmology is explained, the laws of thermodynamics and matter and antimatter, some of the ancient theories, too, of history, of what ancient people such as Plato and others thought about our universe. The question is asked, how old is the universe, and is there life in outer space? All you need to do to receive this booklet is to give us the call letters of your station. We'd like that. You would, please? The call letters of your radio station. While you're at it, why don't you request the current number of the Plain Truth and find that there is a solution beyond human understanding. And we talk in the Plain Truth plainly, even about Bible prophecy and about an ultimate solution beyond the acknowledgement of today's news media, because they simply do not acknowledge God or Bible prophecy.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. Thank you.